Good evening, everyone. This is Terry Lynn Koob, host of the Blue Plate Special. And on tonight's menu is Steve Loudon, the Anthony-nominated writer of the Tommy and Shayna Capers series. Steve's novels include Crosswise and Crossbones with Down and Out Books, his Greg Salem punk rock PI series, Bad Citizen Corporation and Grizzly Season, and he's also the co-host of his own podcast, Writer Types. Steve lives in L.A., and since the weather is terrible here tonight in Kansas, I'm completely jealous of that. How you doing tonight, Steve?
Well, we don't have to worry about any tornadoes or spinning houses crushing witches out here in L.A. I think it's about 74 degrees and sunny.
I hate you. Just wanted to get that out of the way right up front. Well, as a native Californian too, I can remember those days up in Stockton, because the words "it is dry heat" actually do mean something. That I've learned that after living in the Midwest. So enjoy it. But congratulations on your Anthony nomination. You're in the novella category.
Yeah, that's correct. It was a big surprise and pretty amazing to have, you know, because the nominations come from other readers and writers. It was a big surprise and a wonderful surprise. And you know, the thing that I love about it so much is it was in the novella category, and I really love novellas, and I think it's a fantastic form for crime fiction. And on top of that, I got to be nominated with quite a lot of my friends in the same category. So it's like everything about it was just perfect.
So which of your books is actually the one that's nominated?
The first Tommy and Shayna crime caper, which is called Crosswise.
Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Well, it's, you know, interestingly enough, it started off as a short story. My family and I were vacationing in Florida. And, you know, I would get up early before everybody else and kind of sit out on the balcony on the second story of this house we were staying in and look out at the, you know, white sand beaches and the sort of crystal clear water. And I started imagining a murder in this little beach town where we were staying. And over the course of the week we were there, I wrote about 5,000 words. And when I got done, I showed it to a few people and was pretty strongly encouraged by everybody I showed it to expand it into something more. And so I went from 5,000 words. A few months later, I was around 30,000 words. And I thought about going longer, but really I felt like the story had kind of reached its natural length. So I didn't really set out to write a novella, but that's sort of what ended up happening with the story. And then based on the response I got and the enthusiasm from Eric Campbell and the team at Down and Out Books about the characters, we decided to write a sequel, which is Crossed Bones, which came out in May.
Excellent. So you're saying that novella, around 30,000 words?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, I think it's one of these things that's kind of hard to define. People have different ideas about what novellas are. I think that, you know, you're at a short story at around 5,000 or 8,000 words. You're at a novelette up to about 15,000 or 20,000 words. And I think the novella is in the 20,000 to 40,000 range. And then north of 40, you're starting to look at a novel.
And you found when we were talking before the show, you were talking about how Down and Out Books supports the novella. Could you expand on that?
Well, yeah. You know, I think, you know, it's a weird form, right? Because short stories are an understood form. They can be in anthologies. They can be in webzines. And people have been writing them forever. They get published in magazines. And then there's the novel, right, which is, I think, what a lot of writers set their sights on when they set out to write the book they have in their mind, or, you know, when they come up with the character, it usually ends up being that the goal is to write 60, 70, 80,000 words, 100,000 words. And then the novella is kind of just like this, you know, book length that's in the middle at 20,000 to 40,000 words. And I think, you know, when you talk to people about getting them published and whether or not there's a readership for them, I definitely think there is a readership for them in genre fiction, specifically in crime and mystery and sci-fi. in romance, YA, that, you know, there's a lot of people publishing, especially ebooks. But there aren't a lot of publishers out there that are willing to take a risk on publishing a novella, simply because I don't think bookstores generally stock them, is my understanding anyway. And I like that Eric Campbell and the team at Down and Out have sort of just said, we don't really care what the length is. If the story's good, if the writing's strong, you know, and if it's a compelling crime story, we're happy to publish it and we'll find readers for you and we'll get you distribution. So it's not really a surprise to me that three of the five best novella nominees came from Down and Out, simply because they're taking the chance on novellas and publishing quite a lot of them.
And doesn't it harken back to, I mean, isn't Crosswise a book that we could have seen on the old wire spinner racks in the dime stores back in the day?
I mean, yeah, to a degree. You know, you've got the broken NYPD cop who chases sort of a femme fatale to her hometown in Florida. And so there's a lot of that I'm playing with, but I'm taking a lot of those tropes and stereotypes and kind of fiddling with them a little bit. So there are moments in the book where I stretch things pretty far into what borders on absurdity. But, you know, I felt like coming from a short story and then having the chance to expand these characters, you know, I'd already published a novel when I wrote this novella. And so the novel is much more, you know, stays true to the structure of a novel. With the novella, I just decided to take some chances and let the characters go in some different directions that I might not have done with, say, the Greg Salem series. And I was actually pretty happy with the way it turned out, and kind of doubled down on the second one, the Crossbones, where things get even more out of control and I have even more fun with some of these tropes and stereotypes. So it's been a blast, and I find it kind of freeing to write in the shorter form.
How absurd and out of control can a place named Precious Acres get?
Well, I mean, you know, Precious Acres is a retirement community, a fictional retirement community that I created to set in this idyllic sort of beach town where I was staying. And I basically populated it with septuagenarian mafioso wannabes from New York. So it's, you know, from the outset, the whole place is kind of ridiculous. And the only job that Tommy is able to get after he's a disgraced NYPD officer is as the head of security at this retirement community full of old New Yorkers. And that's sort of where the action lifts off in the, you know, the first scene, a body is found and Tommy, with his police background, decides he's going to solve the case, even though the local police don't really want his help.
And it says here that the bodies pile up as Russo uncovers a dangerous trail of clues. Now, are you doing kind of a 10 Little Indians thing? Characters start keep getting knocked off, or?
Yeah, the body count definitely racks up in this one. Even at around 30,000 words, the violence, while a little bit cartoonish, is pretty fast and furious. And, you know, the sort of framework of the book is around crossword puzzles. And Tommy convinces himself that that the clues to the murder are being hidden in the local newspaper's crossword puzzles. And so he starts doing crossword puzzles, and that's why it's called Crosswise.
Well, that's cool, because that's not given in the blurb. That adds a whole new thing to it. You know, kind of like what the Zodiac for all in an old people's community. Of course, it would be crossword puzzles.
Right. Yeah, and I have to admit that although I'm not really ready for a retirement home, I have always kind of loved crossword puzzles. So it was a lot of fun being able to kind of use that as a device to drive the story.
So, I mean, what's it, without giving any spoilers up, what's an example of a crossword puzzle clue that would be in this?
Well, it's not really about the clues, generally speaking. It's that Tommy decides that some of the New Yorkers who maybe were involved with the mob before they retired down to Precious Acres are putting out hits on people, and the way they deliver the message about who should be the next target or the next victim is in one across in the crossword puzzle in the local newspaper. I know. See, I told you. It's absurd.
It's awesome. awesome. No, because now I'm thinking too, I'm thinking of like in, you know, in prison, I'm thinking of the codes that go into the letters and everything. But the old folks, they're using the crossword puzzles.
Yep.
And one thing that amuses me too is where I live here in Kansas, there's a town about, 30 miles south of me that the legend is it has a small colony of retired mobsters from Kansas City living there. So that just cracks me up even more.
Well, this becomes this weird theme when you write fiction. You know, I think that you and I are both in the upcoming anthology, Just to Watch Them Die, the one based on the Johnny
yes.
Cash song.
Yes.
So I chose the song 25 Minutes to Go, and mm-hmm. I set it in a prison. And, you know, one of the themes is a serial killer who's into cannibalism. And the editor, Joe Clifford, recently texted me a news story about an actual prisoner who had been making and serving meat out of his murder victims. He had recently died in prison. I had no idea that this guy existed. And I was like, oh, no, like, I think I'm creating this fiction. I think I've got these crazy ideas in my head that are so original. And then I'm finding out more and more that it's like the truth is much stranger than fiction. And to hear that there's a retirement community full of mobsters near you, I shouldn't be surprised, but it definitely makes me laugh.
And on the cannibalistic prisoner, they actually did an episode of Criminal Minds loosely based on that case.
Oh, see,
it's
now
pretty,
I better start paying more attention to pop culture.
It's pretty freaking creepy, let me tell you. I will never eat barbecue from a roadside stand again, let me tell you. Just straight up. That one is completely off the menu there. Yes, isn't that anthology amazing?
Yeah, you know, I was a musician for a long time in another lifetime. And, you know, music is a big foundational part of my life. So, you know, to get the chance to be in an anthology like that one, or, you know, I was in the Replacements anthology that was called Waiting to Be Forgotten that was edited by Jay
mm-hmm.
Springer. And that's actually up for an Anthony Award for Best Anthology, I think, this year. I love the intersection of crime and rock and roll, or the intersection of crime and music so much. So when these themed anthologies come out, I'm always trying to send off a story and submit it and hope that I get to be included.
And I actually, how I got to know Joe Clifford was through the Springsteen anthology, because I am a Springsteen super fan. And when notice of the Springsteen anthology came up, I was just all over it. I'm not in it. The books were already closed on it by the time I knew about it. But that's how I got to know Joe Clifford, because we're both really big Springsteen fans. So I think these anthologies are both interesting and clever.
Yeah, I kind of like the, you know, there's been other ones. I think there was one called Mama Tribe that was based on country songs. I think Jim Fusilli put together a rock and crime anthology of short stories. Like, it's a great sort of way to create structure around a collection or anthology of different authors writing short stories and just have a thematic theme that is going to, you know, connect with the readers. But more than anything else, it's fun when you're the writer and you're a fan of that artist. I mean, I was lucky enough to have seen Johnny Cash perform when I was in my 20s. And, you know, like, he's probably one of the best, most amazing songwriters ever and one of my favorites. And so to be able to contribute a story to this one was just it was thrilling for me.
Yes, I mean, I grew up on it. That, you know, my dad, that was my dad's idea of country music, was Johnny Cash. So it was in my household. Yes, I based mine on the song Man in Black, and I took a vigilante turn with it of
yeah,
what
I mean,
the Man
that,
in Black
I,
accomplishes.
I took a look at some of the stories in there, man. There's some really strong writing, and just the way that people approach the opportunity, you know, you give something as loose as pick a Johnny Cash song and kind of make it crime and go. And everybody uh-huh. takes a different approach and has a different voice and has a different idea of how to bring that to life. And that's why, you know, I love anthologies that have a theme like that. Like, I've got a short story coming out in one, I think it's in October, that Kate Malman and Dan Malman, who, you know, they do the reviews on our Writer Types podcast, and they also
did you kill Dan?
Crime
did
Screen
you kill
magazine.
Dan Malman?
I did kill Dan Malman, and I was very honored to be invited by Dan Malman to kill Dan Malman.
I've had a couple of Dan Malman's killers on this show, and I can't wait to read it. Danny Gardner was on the show, and I'm a huge fan of his work, and his story in the Johnny Cash anthology just blows me away. It's incredible. When I was I got invited late to contribute, and Joe sent me a couple of stories. He said, here's kind of the style I'm looking for, and one of them was Danny Gardner's. And I'm just like, oh, hell, you know, because
yeah,
he's so good.
Yeah, Danny's a fantastic writer. He's, you know, we're really lucky out here in L.A. and just the West Coast in general. There's a lot of really talented crime writers out here, and I've gotten to know Danny really well over the course of the last few years, and we've done several readings and events together, and you know, the guy's definitely a character, and he's an amazing writer and an amazing storyteller. And, you know, part of this crew on the West Coast that's got like Matt Coyle and San Diego, and we've got Sarah Chan and Danny Gardner here, and Tom Pitts and Joe Clifford and Holly West up north, and of course Beatner, my partner from Writer Types, is here in Los Angeles. And it's
John Shepard?
I do know John Shepard. We're both on Down and Out, but also I've been at a lot of the same conferences and LA-based book events with him. He actually lives in the town where I grew up in Southern California, in the South Bay, the Manhattan Beach, Redondo Beach area.
Oh, that's cool, because he was on the show last week, and he is also one of the nominees in your category as well. So
yeah,
that's
I don't have
gonna,
a single
that's...
good thing to say about his writing at all. I think if you're going to vote, you definitely don't want to vote for John Shepard. No, I'm just kidding.
Total hack,
of
right?
Course.
Total hack.
I might vote for him.
And I think, is it Angel Cologne that's also in your category?
Yeah, Angel, who's also a friend, he's another amazing writer, is with Down and Out Books, No Happy Endings, is really great. It's you know, the setup of the book is so crazy because it's basically based on a sperm bank robbery, which is just seems like a funny thing you would come up with at a bar. But he really pulls it off, and the character he creates to kind of drive the action is really amazing. And then, of course, Sarah M. Chen, Cleaning Up Finn. Speaking of where I grew up, she actually set her novella, Cleaning Up Finn, in Redondo Beach, which is the town I grew up in. And so, like, reading that was like going home for me. And then on top of which, I jokingly refer to it as restaurant noir, because it's about a restaurant manager who gets himself into a bunch of trouble. And I worked in restaurants and bars down there for a very long time. So it's like, hey, I tell her often when I see her here at events in L.A. that I feel like she wrote that novella for me.
That's perfect. I think the Down and Out should gather all of you at BoucherCon in Toronto and make you have like a dance off or something like that.
But, you know, every year at BoucherCon, there's talk of karaoke, and I think some years they've pulled it off, but it seems to me like at this point, I like it almost better as a rumor than if it actually happened.
I agree with you on that one. But, yeah, the voting is just not going to be enough to settle this novella category. It's, a dance-off, arm wrestling, something. There have to be something else. Because yeah, it's amazing. You guys are doing great. And tell me a little bit more about your main character, Tommy Russo. I'm always fascinated by people's main characters.
Yeah, I in the two series that I have going on, quite by mistake, or at least I wasn't conscious that I was doing it, I made both of them ex-cops, made them both ex-disgraced cops. While the characters are very different, there's something, I guess, very appealing to me about the ex-cop as a protagonist in a crime novel. I think it's probably mainly because I want to put a gun in their hand, but I don't want them to be beholden to what a badge means. But, you know, Tommy's kind of a wannabe tough guy, New York cop, and he kind of falls for a hell-raising woman who convinces him to steal some cocaine from the evidence locker and gets caught, and so he loses his badge. This all happens in, like, the first two paragraphs of the book, so I'm not really giving anything away. But he ends up in her hometown in Florida and really is just, like, hangdogging for her. And he gets back there and gets this job as head of security, which means he doesn't have much money, and he no longer has access to cocaine, so she disappears on him. So he's stranded there, kind of waiting around for her to come back. I think, like with most crime books, he's a pretty flawed guy, has a bit of a drinking problem, a little bit of a loner, socially awkward. But he has a lot of faith in himself, in his ability as a police officer to solve crimes, even though it's not really proven by his actions. And so really a lot of the action in the novella is him butting heads with the local sheriff about the difference in how you solve a crime in a small town in Florida versus how you would solve a crime in New York City.
Because there truly is no such thing as an ex-cop. You just may not be working as a cop at that exact moment. So you've always got the mindset.
For sure. And that's why it was like so much, you know, again, playing with the stereotypes and tropes of crime fiction. It was like, it was so much fun to make him a security guard, because now he's like this, like, you know, tin soldier version of a police officer, where he has some authority, or at least he has, you know, a flashlight and like a billy club or something, and literally patrols Precious Acres in a golf cart. And so he's this very diminished version of the person that he thinks he is. And it's like him dealing with that and, you know, taking the blows to his ego, not only of his whole life and profession falling apart, but, you know, understanding that the girl that he threw everything out for left him the minute he didn't have any more drugs to give her, basically.
Well, and I like that, too. In my work, the sheriff tends to be a villain. And there's a reason behind that that I won't go into on the air. But for the same reason, everyone's fascinated with the kind of when cops go bad or cops are disgraced. Same way with lawyers, which is my main character. She ends up disgraced in my novel as well. We're fascinated by that.
Well, yeah, you know, I will say that, you know, I just finished final edits on the third Greg Salem novel. So that one comes out in January from Rare Bird Books. And so I've written three novels in that series and two in the novella series. And so I've got five books I can look at and kind of read myself and try to understand where I'm coming from as an author. And I got to say, I realize that every single character I write is deeply flawed in several ways. Like I don't really have like anybody who stands out as somebody who's not completely deeply flawed and screwed up in some pretty profound ways. And I'm starting to kind of wonder why that is. I don't know if it's, you know, the time I spent in rock bands and the kinds of people I got to meet, you know, touring around in a van and playing at rock clubs or hanging out with roadies too much, but people are deeply flawed in the universes I tend to create.
Well, we don't tune into these books. Nobody tunes into this book to hear about Tommy Russo doing a shift for Meals on Wheels. You know, that's just not what it's about.
Well, you just gave away the concept for the third book in the novella. How dare you?
Damn it. That comes from a discussion I had with Meg Gardner a couple of weeks ago about her newest book, which is a cop chasing kind of a mythologized Zodiac killer. And she said someone had said, you know, does everything have to be so bad for her? And it's like, well, you know, we don't tune in to see her volunteering for Meals on Wheels. That's not what we're here for.
Yeah, we had her on the Writer Types podcast, and she was just fantastic. What a great guest. So smart and funny. And we had a really funny conversation about her history with miming, which is probably something you should check out if you're a Meg Gardner fan.
Oh, wait a minute. Meg Gardner mimes?
You're going to have to listen to the episode.
Okay, I will. How I met her was, it was at BoucherCon in Raleigh, and just for whatever reason, where we were both staying in the hotel or whatever, every, like, five or six times the elevator door opened, she was there. So she was like my personal elevator operator at BCon in Raleigh. And
oh,
it just
funny.
Got to be funnier every single time. Hey, I also had Brad Parks as my doorman. I mean, I was quite the distinguished guest there that year.
You're keeping pretty good company.
I try to. And so are you going up to Toronto this year?
Yeah, actually, you know, I was already planning to go, and we're going to be doing some fun stuff up there with our podcast, Eric Beatner and I. But also, mm-hmm. that's where my agent lives and works out of Toronto. So it'll give me a chance to actually meet the team up in Toronto that she works with.
Oh, that's excellent. I think we may be doing some, we'll probably be doing some podcasting from there as well. And if not in person, I'll be doing it remotely. To talk to some of y'all while you're there as well. It's going to be good. I can't make Toronto this year, but I will be in Florida the next year with bells on. All you have to do is follow the bells, and you'll find me there. And we'll definitely be doing some podcasts and that type of thing there. And I really look forward to meeting everybody in Florida. Although I probably walked by everybody in the hallway in Raleigh, because BoucherCon is just so big and so vast.
I had we were lucky in Raleigh because, do you know Eric Pruitt?
I don't know him. I've never met him. I just know him by Facebook.
Yeah. He lives there. And so he was the most unbelievably gracious host when we were there and spoiled a lot of us that he knew through the crime writing community and took us to his favorite restaurants and showed us around and gave us little historical tours of the downtown area. It was like, at one point, he and Krista Faust and Johnny Shaw and Angel Colon and Jay Stringer and I climbed in this tiny car and drove for 45 minutes in this crazy rainstorm to get to this barbecue restaurant that he swore by. It was like a hell ride, and all of us were like crammed into this clown car to be able to get to this fantastic barbecue restaurant. And I have to say, it's still, to this day, some of the best barbecue I've ever had in my life. And I've also never laughed so hard because, I mean, everybody in that car is absolutely hilarious. And it's BoucherCon memories of all time.
What you just described is essentially the plot of a Johnny Shaw novel. So I can see it completely. He is hilarious as well. And I had a great time there. We discovered a little diner coffee shop, which is my passion anyway. We discovered one maybe about six blocks from downtown, and that was where we ended up eating practically every morning. And they thought we were crazy, and it was awesome because we are. So it was perfect.
Yeah. It's funny too. You get in the, before I published my first novel, I had one, maybe two short stories published and or accepted, and I went to BoucherCon in Long Beach, and I did not know anybody, like, except for like a few people I'd met on Facebook or mm-hmm. you know, the people who'd accepted my short stories at that time, which were, I think Tom Pitts might have been the very first from Out of the Gutter, he and Joe. And so, you know, I kind of like attached myself to them and their crew, and I got to say, man, these people who write these books who are so violent with these deeply flawed characters who are doing all these terrible things and making these horrendous decisions for themselves and the people around them, the people who write those books are some of the kindest, most giving, most friendly people I've ever met. And so going to BoucherCon or going to Left Coast Crime, you know, going to the California Crime Writers Conference, it's always got a little bit of like a high school reunion vibe. When you just end up having the best conversations in the bar and just spending yeah. hours and hours laughing and talking about writing, you know?
Oh, I remember it at Raleigh. You know, I was walking down the street with my friends and suddenly I'm just like, oh my God, I know you. And I did, of course, from Facebook. And yeah. They're like, I know you. It's like, we know each other. Yeah, Facebook is definitely the high school yearbook for writers. You know, we can actually be friends and have social interactions without ever having to leave the house. It's fabulous.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's always nice to find out that a writer you're friends with on Facebook is not some Russian porn bot, because I have some suspicions about a few of them.
Not many of them anyway, okay? I mean, I'm still not sure about Joe, but do you know the ice cream cone story between Joe and Tom Pitts?
I have been around them in their neighborhoods in San Francisco and Berkeley, and spent time with them there. And it comes up a lot, but I just decided not to ask. Joe just brings it up and kind of throws it in Tom's face often enough that I'm just like, oh, that's some weird story in their past. And having heard some of Tom Pitts' true stories about his time on the streets, I'm almost afraid to know what it's really about.
Well, if you look into, I'll find it for you, because I did it. I did the Authors on the Air version of your interrogation with Tom Pitts. And Joe had told me to make sure I ask him about the ice cream cone, so I know the whole story, and it's hilarious. And it's just one of those things that's been a thread through their friendship all these years. Yeah, they have such an amazing story. Just both of them just have such incredible stories.
You know, I mentioned earlier that I, you know, I really like that intersection of crime fiction and rock music. And, you know, I was really lucky to meet Joe and Tom early on when I was first kind of putting the feelers out with my short stories and my writing, mm-hmm. and kind of trying to figure out the crime writing community on the West Coast. But both of them are musicians as well. And so that kind of connected me pretty immediately in a different way than just around our writing and my trying to submit short stories to Out of the Gutter. But to the point where we had talked pretty seriously about forming a band to perform at a bar in BoucherCon this year in Toronto. And it was going to be me and Joe, Tom Pitts, Mike Creedon, who's a fantastic writer and bass player out of Florida, and then Eric Beatner, who is my friend and my co-host from Writer Types. He's a guitarist, and so we had a full band because I'm a drummer. And we actually started trading emails, and this stupid idea we had at a pizza restaurant in New Orleans kind of started to take shape. And then, like, it was about 14 emails deep of this group of people when we realized that none of us liked any of the same music, and this was a terrible idea. So the band broke up about a week later before we ever practiced once.
Oh, man, that's terrible. Because, I mean, you guys would be like the crime fiction rock bottom remainders.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Of crime fiction. And I am very, very proud. I have a story at Out of the Gutter as well. That was like one of my very, very proud moment acceptances when I got that. Because it's such a great running, I call them, you know, like running blog anthologies of flash fiction. Their stories are just incredible.
Yeah, I, you know, at least with the crowds that I run in, it felt like if you could get a story placed with Out of the Gutter and you could get a story placed with Shotgun Honey, you were pretty much onto something. And I think that's still true. It, you know, flash fiction is a particular kind of art form, and it comes with some pretty serious challenges to be able to tell an interesting and complete story in 700 words or 1,000 words. But once you get into it and you see how strong these writers are and what it takes to actually be able to put out quality stories at that length consistently, it's pretty mind-blowing. And so I've always been really proud to be able to have said that I published with Out of the Gutter and Shotgun Honey.
I understand, and I agree 100%, and need to get more back to it. So what are you working on now?
Well, like I said, the third Greg Salem book is called Hang Time, and that comes out in January. You know, that series was always meant to be a trilogy, and so this is the third book, and so this is sort of the end of that cycle. You know, it remains to be seen whether or not I'll write more either about the main character or about that universe when all is said and done. But the three books that I initially plotted and set out to write, this is the third book, and it comes out in January. So I'm very excited about that. Obviously, Crossbones just came out. I talked about the two anthologies that I'm going to be in. I believe the Johnny Cash one should be out this month or next month, and then Killing Malman comes out in October. And then I've actually just completed the second round of pretty deep edits on a new standalone that I'm working on with a whole new universe of characters that I'm really excited about, but probably shouldn't say any more than that about it.
Ooh, mystery. Will it be coming through Down and Out Books or through Rare Bird?
I don't know yet, actually. It's the first thing that I'm giving to my agent, and she's working with me pretty closely on it. And so, you know, we'll see. I love both those publishers and would be open to that, but I'm open to whatever. I just, as the writer in this, I've spent a lot of time with Tommy and Shayna, and I've spent a lot of time with Greg Salem, so it's just exciting and a new challenge to be able to dive back in and have to get back into creating the universe again. Because when you write a series, you kind of build the universe, and then you keep putting stories in that universe to a degree. And so I haven't gotten the chance to make a big new universe in a while, and that's been a fun challenge for me.
Is it crime?
Oh, very much so. It's about a hitman.
Excellent. So finally, too, it's not like you don't have enough else to do. What's up with the podcast, Writer Types?
Well, that was, I guess I keep harping on it, but getting back to the music background and sort of connections that makes in this crime writing community, at least out here on the West Coast, Eric Eaton and I got to know each other because we had not only the crime fiction in common, but because we both played in bands in Hollywood, and we were able to kind of talk a language and about certain bands and certain clubs we'd played. And we got to know each other pretty well, and we were driving down to San Diego to do a book event, and he was playing, some of his old bands for me in his car, and I was telling him some war stories from being on the road with some of the bands I was in. And we started kind of just talking about a love of music, but also then our love of podcasts and how it would be interesting to try to start a podcast that was more like a variety show. And, we kind of just started joking around about either of us have time for that. And literally by the time we got home from San Diego that night, we were making plans to sit down and sketch it out. And we launched it in January. And it has been monthly ever since. And I got to say, it's probably one of the best decisions ever because I've gotten to work with Eric really closely and that's been fantastic. But we've also, gotten to speak with some really incredible authors who were super generous to give us their time and share their stories with us. And now we're branching out into doing more events. A few months ago, we did a thing called Crime Quiz Live, where we put together some pretty ridiculous crime and mystery trivia questions and put Krista Faust, Danny Gardner, and Glenn Eric Hamilton on the spot in a bookstore and recorded it and released it as a podcast episode. And we're about to do it again at this really incredible bookstore in downtown L.A. called The Last Bookstore with, Jordan Harper, Harley Jane Kozak, and Nadine Netman. So it's going to be a really amazing time. And we're actually planning something similar at BoucherCon, though we're not really quite ready to announce that one yet. So the podcast has kind of taken on a life of its own and really has introduced me to some fantastic new writers and books that I probably might not have read on my own because I was so deeply into indie crime, but now I'm kind of branching out. But, you talk to Sarah Paresky or you talk to Joe Lansdale or you talk to Jess Lurie or Johnny Shaw and all the amazing guests we've had on the show, and it just kind of blows your mind just how diverse and talented this crime writer community that we're part of truly is.
And I agree. This month, Pam Stack, our executive producer, she wanted to take a little time off and work on some other things. So she gave me all of her slots for the month. So I've been broadcasting three times a week for the entire month of August and have just had amazing guests. Everyone from Mike Cole to J.D. Rhodes to Gabino Iglesias. And the community is just just incredible and so welcoming. And I'm dedicated to it being a multi-genre, like I said in the interview I gave you for the blog, because I read multi-genre. So it'll be a little bit of everybody. Angel is actually going to be on Friday night, and your partner in crime, Eric, is going to be on the following Friday night.
Well, you've got some amazing guests. I mean, I'm sure that conversation with Gabino was incredible, because that guy is so much fun to hang out with and talk to.
Oh my gosh, it was absolutely incredible. Him and Danny Gardner, I pretty much ran those right up until all the time I had allotted for the show, and I didn't want to let him go. They'll both be back on. And then next Wednesday, Jonathan Mayberry's coming on. And I'm
very
just
cool.
Like fangirling all over the place on that one. So, and then Chris Holm will be on the – basically, my schedule for the rest of the month is Angel Cologne, Loretta Ross, a friend of mine who writes these – they're cozies, but they have sharp teeth to them. She's very erudite. Jonathan Mayberry, Eric, Chris Holm, Shane Yerke, and then a friend of mine, Foyna Jameson, who writes these comedic horror novels. So – I'm just so privileged to have everybody taking their time out to talk to me. I can't wait for the rest of it. And then I'll settle into a Friday, once a week, Friday broadcast.
Yeah, you've got your hands full. See, but it becomes a bit of an addiction, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even then, I was kind of looking at going, oh, man, I'm only going to be on Friday. And then I'm thinking, you know, the prep work and the time and everything. And it's like, oh, thank God, it'll only be on Friday. And I'm also probably I'm working on doing a once a month show on what I'm going to call kind of the Geek Squad version of it, which is going to be writers in other media, you know, comic books, gaming, animation, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is going to go real well too. My first show, which will probably be in October, he's a fairly well-placed animator with DreamWorks, and he's going to come in and talk about the movies that he's worked on the for DreamWorks. I think that'll be fantastic. So
yeah, we're talking a lot about how to sort of diversify and broaden outside of the crime and mystery universe. I mean, there's so many authors we still want to talk to that are crime and mystery writers, but ways that we can expand outside of that and get some different voices into the show, because, you know, it becomes addictive as the host of the podcast. As you dig in and meet these people, you just want to meet more and more people like that, because this is your tribe. These are the people that most interest you. And all of us start off as readers before we're writers. So we just kind of want to have more and more of these conversations. And I can't tell you how often Eric and I talk about potentially not making the podcast monthly, making it biweekly, or making it, you know, weekly. And we don't really have the time or bandwidth to do that right now. So we're sticking with monthly, but we're definitely tempted, because these conversations are a lot of fun. And there's just so many stories out there and just so many interesting people putting out really quality work. There's just an endless supply of new guests.
Well, your events sound fascinating. They just sound absolutely fascinating. So what should I, you know, is there anything you can rat Eric Beatner out about? Is there anything I should ask him about next Friday?
You know what? I will just advise you to stay away from talking about musical tastes, because that guy has got some of the most out there, deeply indie, obscure musical tastes you are going to find anywhere. And I can tell you from being on long rides with him, he's like, oh, you ever heard of these guys? They put out 145 in 1963 in a little town in Alaska. And I'm like, no, I haven't heard about them. You know, he is so deep into indie music that you will spend a whole hour talking about his bizarre musical tastes. But it's one of the things I really appreciate about him.
Oh, for sure. Well, I love that thing where you said where your band that you put together, that nobody could agree on anybody's musical taste.
Oh, I mean, we were having some of the most, you know, well, first of all, it was just a chance to insult each other, which is always a lot of fun. But, you know, people would throw out a band and then like three or four people would jump in and just start insulting them about their terrible musical tastes, and then suggest, you know, a song of their own or an artist of their own. And then everybody else would jump in and tell them how stupid an idea that was. And it just, it devolved into exactly the kind of experience I had in the bands I was in high school, where you just have a bunch of opinionated people who don't, you know, really it's about having fun and talking about music, and nobody really ever had any intention of playing music together. I mean, never mind that none of us live in the same town except for Eric and I. So I don't even know how we thought we were going to pull that off, maybe by Skype, but it was a fun way to kill a couple hours over the course of a week while we tried to come up with the set list.
Well, what kind of a band did you play in?
I grew up in Southern California, listening to a lot of punk rock at first. And so, you know, I mean, the town where I grew up is where Black Flag and the Circle Jerks and bands like that, the Descendants, Pennywise. So there's this sort of ingrained hardcore punk rock thing that's happening in Southern California. And if you grow up there and you're into bands, it's sort of like your birthright. You know, Nolan Knight, who's another indie writer out here who's a fantastic writer, also grew up in the South Bay, but he's a little younger than me. And I was talking to him about, you know, the kinds of bands he listened to. And he's like, dude, I listen to the same bands you listen to, because if you're from our neighborhood, you basically just get handed a mixtape when you're 11 and told that this is what you're supposed to listen to, which is true, right? But it's fantastic. So I started listening to hardcore. You know, my older brothers were feeding me a steady diet of heavy metal when I was growing up. And then I discovered hardcore punk when I kind of came into my own. And then pretty quickly, you know, I made the transition from the Black Flag and those kinds of bands to, like, some of the Minneapolis bands like Husker Du, and then followed them into the more, you know, power poppy post-punk stuff like the Replacements and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, from there it was just, you know, into glam rock and diving even further back in the Velvet Underground and getting into indie rock like the Pixies and that kind of stuff. And my musical taste has just kind of grown and evolved from there, but it started in punk, and there was always a little bit of that kind of energy and anger in the bands that I played in. But, you know, I think a lot of the bands I was in kind of landed squarely in the power pop category.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, I can see some real arguments going down, of the very, very best kind. So what are you reading? That tries to be the question that I end up broadcast with. What are you reading and into right now?
You know, we were lucky enough to have Ryan Gaddis. The next episode of Writer Types is coming out this coming Monday, and we have James Ziskin, Eric Story, Rachel Housel Hall, and Ryan Gaddis. And Ryan Gaddis is an LA author who wrote a book called All Involved that was published a couple of years ago that sort of was a multi-perspective story based around the LA riots. And it was incredible. Probably, you know, one of the books that I recommend to people the most when they want to read a book, like what's a good crime fiction book set in Los Angeles, I always recommend All Involved, or I have in recent years. And he just just released his follow-up, and it's another standalone, and it's called Safe. And it's a couple different perspectives telling the story of a safe cracker who kind of goes rogue. And it's got sort of a Robin Hood vibe to it. He writes about the Southland and sort of about gang culture in a pretty incredible way. And he's got this really unique perspective on Los Angeles. And his stuff is really based in sort of doing, from what I can tell, really in-depth research on these cultures in Los Angeles. And so I really love Safe, and I'm recommending that one now to everybody. I just finished it, and it's safe to say I was pretty blown away. So I would say Safe by Ryan Gaddis is probably my most favorite read recently.
It sounds like it. It sounds fascinating. I'm going to check it out. Well, and again, congratulations on your Anthony nod. And please, I hope you'll come back when some of these new books of yours start coming out, because I'd like to hear more about them.
Absolutely, Terry. Thanks for having me on. And you know, I know that I'm no Chuck Wendig, but I will definitely be listening in when that one finally airs, and I will come back whenever you ask. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Who among us is Chuck Wendig? I mean, truly. Yeah, he's a great guy and a great writer, and that one is going to be a lot of fun. So like I told him, I said, I will work with you on rescheduling, and you can run, but you can't hide. I will find you. So we will, I will get him on the air as soon as possible. Again, Angel will be on Friday, and then your partner in crime will be on the following Friday. As usual, I forgot to open the phones up for people to call because the conversation was going so great. But please feel free to call in and harass Eric.
Oh, yeah, I will. Actually, I'm going to hang up now and call and harass him. That's what I do on the way home from work every night.
Perfect. I've got a couple of final housekeeping announcements to make. So, again, I will say goodnight and thank you for coming on the Blue Plate Special.
Great chat, Terry. We'll talk soon.
Okay, good night. And if you enjoyed this broadcast, support for this broadcast came from Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. You can check them out at www.downandoutbooks.com. And this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to keep up with who is going to be on the menu every week. Good night, everyone.